Good morning, and welcome back to America's Leaders from Coast to Coast, the 250th anniversary edition. Today is day 47 of the year, and I'm Stephen.
And I'm Leah.
We are continuing our deep dive into the 1850s today. We just covered Millard Fillmore, the man who delayed the Civil War with a terrible compromise. But today, we are looking at the man who took over after him, the 14th President of the United States, Franklin Pierce. And Leah, if there is a presidency that feels like a Shakespearean tragedy from the very first day, it is this one.
It absolutely is. You cannot talk about Franklin Pierce's presidency without talking about the unimaginable horror that happened right before it started. Pierce was a dark horse candidate. He was a Democrat from New Hampshire, very handsome, very charismatic, a Mexican-American war veteran. He wins the election of 1852 in a landslide. He is on top of the world. And then, on January 6, 1853, just a few weeks before Inauguration Day, he, his wife Jane, and their 11-year-old son Benny are taking a train from Boston to Concord.
And the train derails. Their passenger car snaps off the tracks and rolls down a rocky embankment. Franklin and Jane are battered but survive. But their son Benny is crushed to death, right in front of them. It was gruesome. And this wasn't just any son. This was their third son. They had already buried two boys as infants. Benny was the only one left. The psychological toll of that moment completely broke Franklin Pierce before he even stepped foot in the Oval Office.
And Jane Pierce never recovered. She didn't even attend the inauguration. She spent most of her time in the White House writing letters to her dead son, asking for his forgiveness. She believed that God had killed Benny so that Franklin wouldn't have any distractions while being president. She viewed the office as a curse. So Pierce goes to Washington completely alone, emotionally hollowed out. When he takes the oath of office, he actually refuses to swear on a Bible. He chose to affirm the oath because he felt that God had completely abandoned him.
So you have this broken, grieving man stepping into the presidency at the exact moment the United States is ready to explode over the issue of slavery. Politically, Pierce was what they called a doughface. That was a slang term for a northerner who had southern sympathies. He appointed Jefferson Davis, the future president of the Confederacy, as his Secretary of War. Pierce was easily manipulated, and the man who manipulated him the most was Senator Stephen A. Douglas of Illinois.
This is the turning point in American history. Douglas wants to build a transcontinental railroad, but he needs to organize the territories of Kansas and Nebraska to do it. The problem is, under the old Missouri Compromise of 1820, those territories were supposed to be completely free of slavery. Douglas goes to the White House on a Sunday, which was a huge taboo back then, and bullies Pierce into supporting the Kansas-Nebraska Act. This act repealed the Missouri Compromise and said, "Let the people in the territories vote on whether they want slavery or not."
And that concept was called popular sovereignty. It sounds democratic on paper, but in practice, it was a bloodbath. Because the moment Pierce signed that bill into law in 1854, partisans from both sides flooded into Kansas. You had pro-slavery border ruffians crossing over from Missouri, heavily armed, stuffing ballot boxes. And you had anti-slavery free staters moving in from the north, funded by abolitionists, carrying rifles they called Beecher's Bibles.
And they just started killing each other. It became known as Bleeding Kansas. It was a miniature civil war, years before the actual Civil War began. Towns were burned down. Politicians were assassinated. There were two competing governments set up in Kansas at the exact same time. And instead of stepping in to stop the violence, Pierce sided with the fraudulent, pro-slavery government. He sent in federal troops to suppress the anti-slavery settlers. The North was absolutely horrified. His decision to sign the Kansas-Nebraska Act was the match that lit the fuse of the Civil War. It literally caused the creation of the modern Republican Party, which was founded specifically to stop this from happening.
And while the country is bleeding domestically, his foreign policy was also falling apart. Pierce was a huge expansionist. He oversaw the Gadsden Purchase, buying a chunk of what is now Arizona and New Mexico for $10 million. But then came the Ostend Manifesto. This is one of the craziest diplomatic scandals of the 19th century.
It really is. The Southern politicians in Pierce's ear wanted more slave states to balance the power in Congress, so Pierce's diplomats met in secret in Ostend, Belgium. They wrote a memo stating that the United States should offer to buy Cuba from Spain, and if Spain refused, the U.S. should just go to war and conquer it. The plan was to turn Cuba into a massive American slave state. But the secret memo leaked to the press.
The North went ballistic. They viewed it as a massive conspiracy by the slave power to hijack the federal government. The Pierce administration was completely humiliated and had to back down. So by the time 1856 rolls around, Franklin Pierce is arguably the most hated man in the North, and he makes history in the worst way possible. He actively tries to run for a second term, but his own party, the Democrats, say no. They actually dumped a sitting, elected president at their convention, and nominated James Buchanan instead. It is the only time an elected president has been actively denied renomination by his own party.
His post-presidency is just as sad as his beginning. He goes back to New Hampshire. His wife dies a few years later. He remains fiercely opposed to Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War, which makes his neighbors hate him even more. He loses all his friends except for one, the famous author Nathaniel Hawthorne, who had written his campaign biography. When Hawthorne dies, Pierce is left completely alone. There is a famous, though debated, quote, attributed to him when he left the White House. There is nothing left to do but get drunk. And sadly, that's exactly what he did. He died of cirrhosis of the liver in 1869.
It is a harrowing story. A man who sought the highest office, paid the ultimate personal price, and then accelerated the destruction of his own country.
The doughface who let Kansas bleed.
That is President Franklin Pierce. That is our profile for the 14th president. Join us next time as we look at the man who replaced him, James Buchanan. Please note, AI assists in the creation of this podcast from pointedwords.com. And remember, better pointed words than pointed swords.